a lot of financial whiplash as the firm expanded and grew. I went from being a "we might be able to swing a Disney trip if we save for a couple of years" child to a "the bank is repossessing the house. I can't afford to give you lunch money today, but here, have the sandwich I made, tween." To a "yep, I can afford your college tuition. Yes, wherever you choose to go, teenager." Harkness is doing well. For the first decade or so, the managing partners were Eli, Connor, Minami, and her husband, Saul. Then, about 2 years ago, Eli met Rue and decided to cut his work hours in favor of staring at her, I believe. Then Minami and Sul had Kaida, the most adorable baby girl in the universe. That's when Avery's name started popping up. She has the perfect background, longtime friend of Minami, former MBB consultant. We've worked with her for years and like her style. Recently ended a long-term relationship, would love a change of scenery, tired of the East Coast, thinking of relocating to California. Or Austin. Avery took over Minami and Sul's workload while they were on parental leave. A few months later, though, when it was time for them to return, they announced that after producing the cutest fucking kid in the whole universe, I wholeheartedly agree, they wanted to hang out with her a lot. Like, a lot, a lot. And since they now knew, with certainty, that their combined genes were cutest fucking kid in the whole universe material, they were thinking of having another baby soon. They were both equally involved in parenting and weren't sure whether they'd return to Harkness full-time. That's when Avery's position became permanent. Then, a few months later, Connor, whom at the time I considered my closest friend, told me that he was going to start seeing someone. Could I please go fuck off somewhere away from his life? I absolutely could. I went to Switzerland and never, ever thought of him again. Connor who? Connor fucking who? Girl, a voice says from above me. You're clearly about to murder someone, and while I'm not going to stand between you and your kill, will you run the details by me beforehand? I want to make sure that we have something to work with at the trial. Chapter 5. I look up from the still water of the pool, sliding my sunglasses down the bridge of my nose. Standing on the wooden deck, wearing a bright yellow bikini that perfectly contrasts with her dark skin, looking like a goddamn supermodel, is my favorite lawyer in the whole world. I take in the long, rounded legs, the hourglass figure, the shiny waves draped over her shoulders. My eyes stop on the wide-brimmed straw hat, and my frown turns into a cheek-splitting smile. Neota, the younger sister of Tisha, Rue's childhood friend, and, of course, Rue's friend herself. Even if Neota's favorite pastime is to roast them both. I didn't know you took criminal cases, I say, pushing my sunglasses back up. My area of expertise is bankruptcy, but you're clearly gonna need me after the massacre. If I don't reach out for a hug, it's only because she looks too perfect to be subjected to the infamy of chlorine. I watch her take the beach bed next to mine, drape a towel over the headrest, and offer a rare smile. The scent of her perfume, roses, verbena, wafts in my direction. Is that why I couldn't find anyone in the house? Has the butchering already taken place? Damn it, did I miss it? Nope, but dinner's in an hour. Most people are either getting ready or napping. I woke up 30 minutes ago, groggy, not at all rested, and still very tempted to rip into something. For the safety of the antique pillows, I decided to put on a one-piece suit and vigorously swim the irritation out of my body. It didn't totally work. I promise I won't spend the week boring you with my unconditional adoration, but allow me to say it just this once. I'm so fucking happy that you're here, Neota. As you should be, she says haughtily, but adds, also, likewise. You know I like to surround myself with intellectual peers. When Rue entered Eli's life, she brought with her many wonderful things, Tisha and Neota being my favorite. I found their sibling dynamic fascinating from the get-go and felt myself yearning for a sister, preferably one who would make the meanest, cruelest comments about my hair, clothes, and life choices while still sounding like she would throw herself under a bus for me. Enter Niota. She's a handful of years older than me, but we hit it off the second we met. It's because we're both younger sisters and considerably smarter than our older siblings, she told me, in front of Eli and Tisha. I would say no offense, she added in their direction, but full offense is meant. Neither Tisha nor Eli seemed fazed. Niota and I don't text daily updates on the minutiae of our respective lives, and yet we keep in constant touch. We've developed a beautifully low-effort system to show our mutual love and respect, which consists of pebbling each other's social media accounts with links to relevant videos and memes. You came alone too? I ask. I never do weddings with a plus one. Why? It gets awkward for them when I disappear with the hottest man at the party. I nearly do a spit take and I'm not even drinking. Maya, the situation is dire. She reclines sideways, like a post-battle Roman centurion. It's getting harder to meet guys that I actually want to sleep with. You know, you told me that last time we spoke. But then I Googled your firm. And? I saw your colleagues' pictures. They look fine. The slicked back hair does make me throw up in my mouth a bit, but you can work on that. The problem is, they're all lawyers, and I refuse to fuck a lawyer. Why? It's incest, Maya. Just tell me about the whole... She gestures toward my face. Her long nails glitter in the late afternoon sun. The whole... The massacre? Tell me about the rage you're experiencing. I'd rather forget about it. You tell me. Have you met everyone? I think so. Aside from Avery, I think is her name. I must say. She takes her sunglasses off, revealing thick, perfectly curled eyelashes. I've been doing inventory, and it's quite the unique situation. I'm so ready for her to say something stratospherically outrageous. How so? In terms of quantity, things are not looking up. 6 men, only 3 unattached. I mean, I simply refuse to hit on the groom. I'm glad to hear that. The single guys, however, seem to be high quality, like the NHL player. I groan. Axel? Yep. He is fine. And he came with his younger brother, Paul, who's also fine. God, I haven't seen Paul in years. Actually, he may have become a lawyer in the meantime. Uh-uh, I checked. Engineer. She scrunches her nose. He seems really nice, though, which doesn't bode well. For what? For his ability to not latch on to me past the wedding. She shrugs. The nice ones fall easily, and for some weird reason, the meaner I am, the harder they want me. Maybe I should just go for the third one. Who? Hark. He's hot, too. Old enough to know what he's doing. Above all, if I have one talent, and I have a million, it is picking out the most emotionally unavailable man in a group, and boy, is he the one. I guarantee you, that guy hasn't experienced a feeling since the 90s. So, I might... He's mine, I blurt out. Actually, no, I may have hissed it through gritted teeth, which has Niota's slender neck shrinking back and her eyes sharpening. Jesus. I rub my eyes, say a silent prayer for a nunchuck to rotate my way and take me out. Shit, I didn't mean to. Well, 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 well. I'm sorry, I swallow. That was shitty and a little too aggressive of me. If you want to hook up with Connor, you can. Connor, eh? She nods slowly. That's the first time I've heard him called that. Well, it is his name. And when did Connor invite you to use his first name? Her chin dips. Was it when you fucked him? I burst out laughing.
You mean in my dreams?
So you're admitting it. Intrigued, Niota is formidable and unstoppable. Every Niota is. Does your brother know you're into his best friend? It's a very long and boring story. I'm a corporate lawyer, girl. My tolerance for boring is higher than the debt ceiling. FYI, nothing has changed since the last time we met. I still don't understand finance-related jokes.
Poor little girl is just a fucking nuclear physicist. Boo-hoo.
She shakes her head, and I'm chuckling again. Spill, Maya. There isn't much to spill. Eli knows, but also he doesn't. When I moved back from Scotland, I started openly lusting after Connor in front of Eli. More or less jokingly. Less, I'm guessing. I'd tell him stuff like, oh, I noticed Hark's cute after all. Did you see how good he looked in the red tie? That kind of stuff. Of course, Eli did not want to hear any of it. That was 90% of the fun. But he never knew how deep it ran. I can't bring myself to finish. So, is Eli the problem? If anything happened, would he go apeshit?
Bro, you're doing my little sister. I'm gonna have to kill you now.
What an excellent impression. But I doubt it. And by now, he thinks I'm over it. Then, if it's not Eli, what's stopping you from fucking Hark? He is older, for one. And that is an issue because... Good question. Validating, too. I massage my temple. Apparently, age gaps are highly morally objectionable. She waves a hand. Seems like a sweeping generalization. Sure, some are. But you're an adult. There's nothing wrong with having a little problematic summer fling. Especially if you walk into it with open eyes. According to Connor, there is. Something wrong, that is. Hang on. Does Hark know you're into him? I sigh. Let me rephrase. Does he know you as anything more than Eli's sister? Have you ever had a single private conversation with Connor Harkness? She must see something on my face, because she settles more comfortably against the cushions, and I tell her everything. Chapter 6. 3 years, 2 months, 3 weeks earlier. Edinburgh, Scotland. I've been sobbing for 45 minutes. Grotesque, phlegmy, shoulder-quaking heaves when it occurs to me that there is someone I could call. My older brother. Eli is by no means my first choice. He is, in fact, so far down the list, I don't even consider him until a blonde tourist walks past me in a navy blue Penn State shirt. She briefly glances at me before turning to her boyfriend, no doubt to exchange a what-the-fuck-is-wrong-with-the-raccoon-eyed girly covered in snot sitting in St. Andrew's Square Garden at sunset. Look, I glare resentfully at the way the two hold hands. Picture throwing a knife at her back. And that's when the letters string together to form something with meaning. Penn State Field Hockey Team. Field hockey. Hockey. Eli. As far as free associations go, it's pretty weak. My brother used to play the ice variety of the sport, but who cares? It reminds me that I'm not completely alone on this shitty little rock of a planet. The last of the daylight may be slipping away, but someone exists who is related to me by blood. Our shared genes might compel him to pick up the phone. Or even just the fact that I'm calling him for the first time since I was back in Texas for the summer holidays. Last year. Conversations with my brother. Not my most beloved pastime. But beggars can't choose shit, and I haven't given myself much of an alternative in the 4 years since I moved to Scotland. I barely kept in touch with my Austin friends. From high school. From figure skating. From those grief groups I was forced to attend once every 2 weeks. New country, I thought.
determined to leave behind the bullshit of my teenage years. New social circle that will not see me as a bereaved, defective human. It made so much sense, especially after I met Rose on the first day of S1. "Excuse me," she asked after tapping my back. "How comfortable are you with me touching your ass?" I glanced behind me, took in a beautiful upturned nose and bottle green eyes.
"Not very."
"You'll want to get over any reservations in the next few seconds, then."
"Why?"
"Because you clearly sat in pigeon poo, and the back of your jeans looks like you shat yourself."
I tried to look over my shoulder, saw nothing.
"Not gonna work, not by yourself,"
she said sympathetically, before smiling and adding,
"Someone will have to cope a feel.
It might as well be me."
Rose was right. I needed her in my life for many reasons, most of which were not even tangentially related to dry cleaning. She was irreverent and kind, always honest and never judgmental. I adored her from the start. And then I adored her even more when she introduced me to Georgia, her wild, party-minded cousin. I'd always wanted to be 33% of a trio, and boy, did they deliver. For the past 4 years, they were there through it all. Exams, navigating a new country, figuring out what the hell I wanted to do with my life. The small tragedies and the overwhelming joys of everyday life. Except, Rose and Georgia are currently unavailable to me. They, unfortunately, are busy taking each other's side, as well as Alfie's, the guy who dumped me exactly 6 days ago after 1.5 years together.
"It's not working,"
he told me with a pained wince.
"Sorry, Maya. It's just not."
I'd been wondering why he was so light on the details and, well, now I know, don't I? And I'm here, wiping boogers off my face with the sleeve of my sweater, scouring my contacts for my brother's number. I use it so little I can't immediately find it. Did I not save it under Eli or Kilgore? How the fuck did I... Ah, there he is. I must have been feeling super witty on that day. "Zilla, bro." I listened to the ringback tone. Take a deep breath. I don't want to sound like I'm having a mental breakdown as I tell Eli that... What? What am I going to tell my brother? "Hi, some asshole I've been dating but never even told you about just broke my heart." I mean, what am I trying to accomplish with... "Harkness Group, how may I help you?" a woman's voice asks. It's kind, with a slightly plastic beat. Reception-y. Did I accidentally call my brother's job? "Hi, I was looking for Eli Kilgore. I thought this was his phone number." "Mr. Kilgore is en route to Australia, and for the next few hours his calls are being transferred to me. Who am I speaking to?" "Maya, I..." "Ah, yes, we were waiting for your call." "You were? Please hold." A brief parenthesis of jazz-adjacent elevator music is quickly interrupted by a curt...
"Yes?"
It's a male voice, richly toned, crisply articulated, with a slight rasp. Familiar, but I can't place it.
Not my brother's.
What the hell does one reply to?
"Yes?"
I clear my throat. "Hi, I'm looking for Eli."
"Eli's currently on his way to you."
"Is he?"
"Correct."
There is an accent. Not Scottish, nor American.
"In the meantime, I can discuss the financial incentives."
My nose dribbles, and I try to keep my snuffle quiet. "That's very generous of you, but I'm good."
"I see. It was communicated to me that you were worried about the carve-outs, and..."
"I'm not, because I don't know what a carve-out is."
"Excuse me?"
"All I want is to..." I get the tremor in my voice more or less under control and restart. "Is to talk with Eli, so..."
"As the managing director..."
He interrupts, firm.
"Let me reassure you that while Eli is in flight, I am more than capable of..."
Are you capable of putting me through to Eli? Because that's all I'm asking for.
Yep, that was an explosion, followed by a silent, drawn-out beat, and...
There may have been a misunderstanding. Am I speaking with the Myers CEO?
I'm Maya. Maya Kilgore. Eli's sister.
You are?
A deep sigh.
Of course you fucking are.
And that, at last, is when I finally place the voice. It belongs to Hark. Or Eli calls him Hark. Full name, Connor Harkness. No, the Irish spelling, one N. That's what the accent is. Connor Harkness. He's my brother's good friend. The best, maybe. Though adult men rarely dole out the label. Our orbits have overlapped dozens of times, but unlike Minami, Hark never showed the slightest interest in me. I have faint recollections of him sitting in our living room, drinking beers with Eli, wearing high finance clothes, saying high finance things. I cannot remember him ever glancing my way or initiating a single conversation. Frankly, that was a relief. It wasn't fun being that young, feeling older men's eyes on me. I never made overtures, either. I can list few things that would have interested teen me less than a guy twice my age. After moving to the UK, I didn't return overseas for a while, choosing to spend my holidays with Rose and her family, then with Alfie. I did briefly go back last summer, between my third and fourth year, but I must not have crossed paths with Hark because, frankly, I'd forgotten that he existed. Did you think I was Myers something or other?
Yeah. Be nice if you introduced yourself at the start of a call, Maya.
He sounds annoyed, which perfectly matches my recollection of his temperament. Bit of an asshole seemed to be his dominant personality trait. I'm not the type to crumble under the weight of a rude reply, but right now I'm not at my most emotionally regulated.
Okay, well, can I talk to my brother?
His plane just took off. It'll be a while.
My stomach drops.
Is there any way to get in touch with him?
You can text him, but after he boarded, the pilot announced that the Wi-Fi wasn't working.
I might have to scream. Or not. I'll have to wait and see.
How many hours is the flight?
No clue. 20?
20?
Might be more. Or less. I'm not a licensed air traffic controller. But there's this new tech you might use to figure it out.
What tech?
Google, it's called.
I close my eyes as tears start trickling out once again. I cannot deal with... I can't. Not right now.
Well, if you hear from him before I do, please tell him to... Call me back at this number.
I barely manage to spit out the last few words before hanging up and bursting into a fresh bout of tears. I sob for a few seconds, then fold over to bite into the ball of my denim-covered knee.
Fuck him. Fuck him! And fuck all fucking men! If it weren't for them, I wouldn't be sitting in a fucking park past fucking dark.
My phone rings. I pick up, too hopeful and bleary-eyed to check the caller ID. Stupidly ask, Eli?
Are you crying?
It's Connor Harkness. Again.
No,
I snarl, between hiccups.
You are crying.
What do you care? Why did you even call me back?
Because you are Eli's family, and you are crying.
He sounds accusing, like he is being personally victimized by the worst week of my life. Can we please just hang up? You have a Myers to talk to, and I would love to not go through this shitty moment with someone I barely know.
Why shitty? What's wrong?
The question is, whatever the opposite of solicitous is,
why would I tell you?
Because your brother is unreachable and I'm a fucking adult. And you aren't. It is my civic responsibility to make sure children aren't being abducted or some similar horseshit.
Children? Are you for real? Do you even know who you're talking to?
Aren't you Eli's baby sister?
Baby sister? How old do you think I am?
You're 13 or thereabout.
I exhale, shocked. I was 13, 7 years ago.
What? You're not 20.
I sure am.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Christ.
He mutters something sweary about the passage of time, and I roll my eyes. Now that I've caught you up with the rotations of Earth around the sun, goodbye. I make to hang up, but...
No, not goodbye.
His speech is short, authoritarian. It's painfully obvious that he's used to people doing as he says, no questions asked.
Tell me why the hell you're crying, so we can establish that it's just a load of inconsequential shite, and I can hang up the call with a clean soul.
What a piece of shit. Okay, first of all, your soul has never been anything but coal-smeared. I bet you burned ants with magnifying lenses when you were a toddler back during the Protestant Reformation.
That is patently libelous, and I do not deserve...
Secondly, I do not see why I should be wasting my time on you, an absolute no one in my life who clearly thinks I still play with Polly Pockets, despite the fact that I've been registered to vote for 24 fucking moons. Dude, I barely know you, and what I'm discovering is not flattering. So forgive me if I don't share my life story and tell you that my boyfriend of over a year dumped me last week for a girl who not only happens to be my best friend's cousin, but also my roommate. And yesterday, when I came back from the gym, the three of them were waiting to give me some kind of makeshift intervention and tell me that it would be infinitely selfish and evil of me to stand between their whirlwind, star-crossed romance. And since they were ganging up on me, I got so angry that I forgot to do my stupid breathing exercises. I forgot the counting, too. And then I yelled that they could go at it on every surface of our apartment for all I cared, and that I wished them a life full of painful, pus-infected STDs. And this morning, when I woke up, they were there, in the kitchen, watching a panel show, making out under my cupboard, where I put my emotional support tonics wafers, and they told me that I should be ashamed of my behavior last night, that they are afraid of my anger and of my disproportionate reactions, that I am the one at fault for being aggressive, and I couldn't stand it anymore, so I ran out of the door, and now I never, ever want to fucking go back! The last part comes out as a weepy, babbling, maniacal screech. I can tell from the way passers-by turn my way, and from the fact that Connor Harkness, clearly not one to ever shut up, has fallen quiet. I bury my face into my legs again, wishing to become one with the roots of the cherry tree under which I sit. Now, I tell myself, would be a good time to end this call. I'll do that. Then maybe find a pub where I can get wasted and...
Well?
Connor says.
Fuck.
Something about the word, the slight accent, maybe, or the hushed quality of it, has me snorting. Indeed.
I don't know what the hell to do with this information.
That's the exact point I was trying to make, you prickhead. I'm too emotionally exhausted to charge the insult with any heat, but it still reverberates between us, until I hear a deep, rich chuckle. Unlike everything else about this conversation, it's warm, and it feels a little like, not a hug, no, but a hand rubbing soothingly up and down my spine. So I laugh too. Even as he says,
I am willing to concede that load of inconsequential shite might not be the most accurate description of your predicament.
Yeah? I tilt my chin up, smile at the blackening sky. How magnanimous.
Is there anywhere else you could stay for a while? With a friend?
My friends are the ones I'm trying to run from, I don't say. My heart is already too close to breaking.
A park bench? Does that count?
He scoffs.
I'm going to book a hotel for you to stay at. And pay for it.
That's nice, but money is not an issue. Eli has always made sure of that. Being financially independent from him is a priority of mine, and I'm here on a scholarship, work a part-time job. I try not to touch the funds Eli provides for emergencies, but I could book my own hotel. Connor's words, though, resurface a faint memory. Wasn't Connor the one who paid for my travel? Back when I was 14 and did an internship with that California local news station? And the next year, when Eli left for a work trip, didn't he drive me back and forth from school for a whole week? Hang on, didn't Connor used to date Minami too? Yeah, he did. And it feels wrong. Minami was as close to a mother figure as I got after Mom died, and I will forever worship her. So I might be biased, but how did Connor Harkness, supreme asshole, manage to pull someone like her?
Where are you anyway?
Connor asks. Something seems to occur to him.
It's slowly coming back to me. You moved to Europe for uni, right?
So you do know that. Did you think 13-year-olds went to college in foreign countries?
Can't say I ever thought about it. Where are you, precisely?
I'm not telling you, a stranger, where I live.
Come on, Maya. It's not like I don't have the resources to find out.
A tapping, rhythmic sound, like he's typing or drumming his fingers.
Let's see. You mentioned tunnocks, probably for sale anywhere in the world, but particularly popular in Scotland.
I exhale too loudly.
Ah.
He sounds obnoxiously pleased.
St. Andrews, University of Edinburgh.
Motherfucker, I mouth.
Doesn't matter. I'll figure it out. Back to the topic at hand. I'm not going to berate you for your choice in friends and roommates.
You're too kind.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not even kind enough. I've just made similar mistakes. What I don't get is, why should you not feel angry about them bringing their relationship inside your house?
Because, I say, I hope he reads in my tone that what I really mean is fuck off.
Because?
I don't know. I shouldn't have yelled at them.
Among all the blows being dealt here, that seems like the least egregious.
I know, but I have anger management issues.
You do?
Yeah, with some people. Not everyone. I don't, you know, get mad at the customer service guy at Costco.
Is Costco in Scotland?
Yeah, for a while now.
But you don't berate their workers.
No, I swallow. It's mostly with people I care about. When I feel hurt by them, I tend to lash back.
Right. You drove Eli absolutely off his rocker when you were a teenager, didn't you?
I laugh. I may have. And look where it got me. He and I barely talk. But when I moved here, I decided that I wanted to become a better version of myself. And since most of my issues boil down to how angry I always am, I started doing all that shit. Therapy, journaling, identifying triggers. And it works, for the most part. But now I'm furious at them, and I can't figure out if this is me backsliding or a righteous, legitimate feeling. Should I just bottle this up? I wanted Scotland, Maya, to be grounded and easygoing and carefree, but...
It sounds like Scotland, Maya, is more like a plastic doll than a real person.
I squeeze my eyes shut. The night air is getting cold. Yeah. I clear my throat. Scotland, Maya, is a bit of a pick-me.
What does that mean?
It's just I sigh. What the hell am I doing, playing thesaurus for Connor Harkness? Listen, I'm gonna hang up now, and...
Are you going to do something daft?
What? No, it's not like that. I'll go home, I guess.
To your roommate. And your ex.
Yeah. I rub my face. Actually, maybe I'll go to the library for a couple of hours. Just to maximize my chances that they'll be asleep.
Maya.
It's so weird hearing him use my name.
I can find you another place to stay in a second.
Are you handy with booking.com?
No, but I have an executive assistant at my beck and call.
I shouldn't laugh, especially considering that Connor Harkness must be a bitch and a half to work for. The problem is, that is my apartment, and I have a couple of months left in the semester, and my graduation ceremony. I have first-class honors. I worked hard for it. I'm not going to drop out of my life, or even out of our shared D&D campaign. I'm not going to run away like I'm the one who should be ashamed.
You shouldn't.
He agrees. Like no more obvious sentiment has ever been stated. It's just... rejection. Alfie was my first long-term boyfriend, and one of the people who knows me best in the whole world, and it's mortifying that one morning he woke up and decided that I wasn't smart or funny or hot enough for him. Georgia is so effortless and beautiful, and everyone wants to hang out with her. In the meantime, I feel like the odd man out, and I'm starting to wonder if this is what the rest of my life is going to be. So knowing that for the next 2 months, those two will be pitying me and basking in their togetherness and maybe constructing 5 to 10% of their pillow talk around how I'll undoubtedly die alone. I'm crying again. And this is way more than I ever meant to open up about. More than I remember admitting to anyone. And fuck it. I can't. Thank you for talking to me. I feel better now. I don't. Not really. But I hang up anyway. Even as he starts saying something I refuse to listen to. My phone is drenched in tears. I dry it as best as I can, then decide to turn it off, just in case. I dust myself off, grab my backpack. Even in the sudden collapse of my life, I have a single certainty. Next week's nuclear astrophysics test. The uni library is open, so I make my way to George Square and let its pretty bookshelf-like exteriors soothe me. Under the barrel-vaulted ceiling of the hall, I have to force myself to take a deep breath. I've been here with Alfie and Rose more times than I could count on my hands and toes. Georgia would join us, too. She and Alfie both smoke, so they'd frequently step outside for breaks and come back looking flushed and smelling like cigarettes. Even though I never enjoyed the scent, it had become so dear to me that... I'm an idiot. I'm a fucking idiot. I deserve this. I refused to be jealous or suspicious. Aren't relationships supposed to be built on trust and mutual respect and love? What's the point otherwise? Am I supposed to live on high alert when...
Watch where you're going.
A guy hisses at me after I bump into him. I mutter an apology and sit at the closest table, making a superhuman effort to focus on orbital periods. So the numbers and the words get blurry every once in a while. So I barely get done a fifth of what I manage on a regular night. So my head is pounding, and my body weighs a million stones, and... Fuck it. It's been over 3 hours. I'm going to bed. It's late, but it's also a Friday. The streets around campus are still bustling. I drag myself toward my Potter Row apartment, wishing I'd thought of grabbing a thicker jacket before running out this morning. It's nearly midnight when I say one last, please let Alfie and Georgia be in bed, prayer, and stick my key into the lock. As soon as I open the door, animated voices drift from the kitchen. My stomach twists into itself and shreds like confetti. Don't barf, I remind myself, or you're going to have to clean it up. Alfie and Georgia are laughing, and there's no way to my room except past their obnoxious mirth. I toe off my shoes, square my shoulders, and forbid myself from cowering with embarrassment. Hey, I say, forcing my voice into a semblance of politeness. Hey, Maya. Georgia, a vision in her riotous blonde curls and satin lounge set, greets me with a loving grin. Clearly, she drank her own Kool-Aid and is convinced that her only sin was to fall in love and be loved back. Next to her is Alfie, with his ever-messy hair and charmingly crooked teeth. He, at least, has the grace to look remorseful.
Hiya.
They are not alone, but the third in their group is not, as I assumed, Rose. As close to the opposite as one could get, in fact. Leaning against the counter is a tall, handsome man. He has dark, thick hair, a square jawline covered by the shadow of a beard, strong brows that accentuate his light brown eyes. He is familiar, but why? I take in the tailored suit, the way his biceps fill rolled-up shirt sleeves, the droopy, hooded eyelids that make him look a mix of sleepy and irritated, the loafers crossed on the linoleum floor. He's smiling at me. A faint, barely there, shark-like curve of his full lips. I feel as though I should be scared. But of what?
Maya.
A warm, deep, recently heard voice says. That's when it finally hits me. Connor Harkness is in my kitchen. Chapter 7. Present day. Taormina, Italy. Italians eat their meals in the middle of the night. At least, that's what it feels like. Early June in Sicily means that the sun won't fully set until well past 8, but by the time Niota and I stumble our way into the lantern-lit terrace garden, the sky is already dark. If it weren't for the clear shine of the stars, I wouldn't be able to make out where the air starts and the sea begins. It doesn't help that we're the last two guests to show up for dinner. And about 5 minutes late. We march side by side down the cobblestone path, ready to make our shameful entrance. How are they all so goddamn punctual? Niota mutters in my ear. How did we manage not to be? The walk from her room took us 45 seconds, tops. Running behind has to be some kind of superpower. And the problem with a 13-people wedding party, including her, me, and a 16-month-old toddler, is that it's simply not crowded enough to hide our terrible manners. Everyone's already sitting at a long, rectangular table that has been set on a platform made of stone tiles, right in the middle of the lush garden. Strings of fairy lights crisscross above it like a canopy, casting a warm, golden glow across the crisp white tablecloth and the earthy wildflower centerpieces. When the coastal breeze lifts, the candle flames nestled in little terracotta jars flicker, making the glassware sparkle. Red lanterns hang from the closest trees, cypress and olive, as if marking the border between the villa and its groves. Behind all of it, a solemn, moonlit silhouette oversees eastern Sicily. Mount Etna. Most guests are already sipping dark red wines and shots of something that seems to glow neon orange. There are at least three animated conversations going on at once, loud even over the hypnotic chorus of the cicadas. When Tiny barks, then barrels toward me like I'm a soldier returning from a 100-year deployment, they all come to a stop. Tisha notices us and begins tapping her glass with a knife. Get ready. Niota whispers to me. It's losers open mic night. At last, her sister declares. Here they are, our most preeminent guests, bestowing upon us their invaluable attendance. Everyone laughs. My cheeks feel sunburnt. Niota curtsies gracefully and mutters, Little baby Jesus, why did you not make me an only child? But her smile stays in place. It's an act of pure ventriloquism. Hardest battles, strongest soldier, I whisper, searching for Rue's eyes. Sorry, I mouth at her as I rub Tiny's back. I could go to her, hug her, maybe even fuss over how stunning she looks in her white dress and French braid, except she would hate it. She shrugs, the curve of her lips small but warm.
What do you two have to say for yourselves?
Tisha asks. The arm wrapped around the back of her chair belongs to her fiancé, Diego. He's a Silicon Hills tech bro whom I really, really want to find annoying for being part of the crowd ruining my weird little city. Sadly, he thwarted my plans by turning out to be adorable and never wearing a Patagonia vest, driving a Tesla Cybertruck, or drinking Soylent. I remain on high alert. In the meantime, I wave back when he grins at me.
I think we can give them a pass, babe,
he says.
I bet they have valid excuses.
Such as?
He shrugs.
Their brains are not fully formed.
Ah, yes, the raw, unbaked prefrontal cortex of juvenescence. Neota rolls her eyes.
Tish, quit being jealous because the party doesn't start till I arrive. We were simply engrossed in our discussion topic. Mean girls who act all haughty and superior, even though they notoriously wet the bed well into their teens.
I was 9?
I didn't say we were talking about you.
And I had a nightmare.
And yet you're being so defensive. I wonder why.
Neota takes a seat across from her sister, ready to spend the night bickering. Tisha has been Rue's best friend since they were kids, and for a little while I resented my brother for not falling in love with her. I never said it aloud, and I hope to bring it to my grave, even more than the time I took a gummy and DM'd Malala to tell her that I was sure we'd be best friends. Even more than the fact that I cheated on every history exam in 8th grade and know nothing about World War I. Even more than the identity of the person I've fantasized about while masturbating for the last 3 years. But when I first met Tisha, she was so easy to talk to. She'd laugh at my jokes and not let conversations fall into unsettling silences and allow herself to be charmed by me. Meanwhile, Rue... At the beginning of her relationship with Eli, back when I was still living with my brother, she was cold and distrustful. She doesn't like me, I thought. She'd rather I weren't around. It wrung my stomach tight, the fear that her dislike would pry away my single remaining family member right after I'd reconnected with him. Then I would know, really know, what it meant to be alone in the world. But Eli was over the moon. I may have been a jealous, possessive, bratty sister, but not one so cruel to take this once-in-a-lifetime happiness away. So I just kept trying. Pushed through the delicate dance of Rue and me puttering around the kitchen, unspeaking. Forced smiles when I returned home after a day at school, and she'd stare at me with those wide, serious blue eyes. Challenged myself to get her to at least tolerate me. Then, early one morning, a few months after she'd walked into our lives and turned them into maelstroms, she showed up at the door. I'm sorry, I said. Eli's on a work trip for the rest of the week. He must have forgotten to warn you. I'm here for you. Her low, husky voice was firm. Happy birthday, Maya. She held out a pot, and I accepted it. A light green, wide-leafed plant sprung out of a ceramic vase. It's a cucamelon, she explained. A special type of cucumber. I noticed that you like pickles, and thought that you might enjoy this. They are smaller, more or less the size of your fingertip, and tend to be more sour than regular cucumbers.
Did you say cucamelon?
Yes. They are not hybrids of cucumbers and watermelons, that's a common misconception. It's the same family, though. Cucurbitaceae. As the plant grows, you may have to repot it into a larger container, and She stopped, abruptly, looked down at her feet, and I felt like a total idiot. Rue wasn't cold or mean or arrogant. Rue didn't hate me. Rue was awkward. I blinked at her, unsure what to say, and maybe unknowingly communicated it in Morse code because she added, in little more than a whisper, "It's not you, Maya. You have been very welcoming. I am grateful for it. I'm not always able to show it, though." Oh. I'm not the best at this. This? She sighed, nodded.
This.
It should have been an obscure, inscrutable statement, but the relief of it had me feeling as though I were resurfacing after weeks underwater. It occurred to me that maybe the reason Rue didn't laugh much was that she struggled to figure out whether people were laughing at her or with her. That she didn't speak because she didn't know what to say. And that I could stand to be a little less self-centered. I don't mind the quiet. I shrugged. Rue said nothing, just calmly waited for me to finish. And in that rock-solid moment, I knew exactly why Eli had fallen so uncontrollably for her. "I don't mind," I repeated. "As long as you're not planning to convince my brother that I'm a loser." That gave her pause.
"Eli adores you."
"Yeah? I get scared sometimes. Because, you know, it wasn't always good between us." She nodded. "And I don't really have anyone else."
"I understand. I have a younger brother. But it's not working out very well."
We looked at each other. I didn't say that if she wanted a sibling, she could be my sister. She didn't say that if I wanted a larger family, I should keep her in mind. In fact, neither of us said much of anything. But everything changed. I put the cucumelon pot on the back porch, and not only did it not bear the fruits she'd promised me, but it also stopped growing. That's when I relinquished its care back to Rue, who by then had practically moved in. She nursed it back from the brink of death, and then I had the cutest little grape-sized gherkins to snack on, and a future sister-in-law with whom to sit on the couch for hours doing schoolwork while she read her dry nonfiction books. Every once in a while, we'd look up, exchange a small smile, and go back to being alone together. A few weeks later, when Jade began looking for an apartment, she realized how little she could afford without a roommate. "I could go live with her. Do you need me to move out?" I asked my brother.
"Honestly?"
"Honestly." He shook his head.
"No, and neither does Rue. We enjoy having you around. She's worried that you'll disappear from our lives, and maybe I am too."
"I wouldn't," his eyebrow rose, "do it again." He laughed.
"I know you can't live with your adult brother for the rest of your life, but I'd love having you close by. Strictly for dog walking reasons."
His face was pure seriousness. I nodded, just as solemn. "I need you close by too. Strictly for organ donation reasons."
"How fortuitous."
And that's how Jade and I ended up finding an apartment 5 minutes away. I never expected that Rue and Eli would ever have a destination wedding, considering her issues around socializing. But no one here will demand from her anything more than she's willing to give. No one here is an asshole. Except maybe. My eyes brush against the figure standing under a string of bistro lights. I immediately bounce back to the safety of the table. "I saved you a spot next to me," Minami tells me. And I'm grateful and relieved, like I've been saved from finding a seat during fifth grade lunch period. She holds out her arms, and I duck in for a hug. Her straight, dark hair smells like baby powder and the same zesty fragrance she was using when she first held me at my father's funeral. She strokes my hair behind my ears, scanning my face. There is something maternal, parental about it. But unlike being called a girl by Connor,
this doesn't make me bristle. She earned this by teaching me how to use tampons, reading through all my college applications, talking me out of shaving my eyebrows at least twice. And if the fact that she's Connor's ex makes all of this weird, I'd rather not think about it.
You look tired, she says.
Yeah, I'll sleep great tonight. What's up, Sol? Her husband, a stocky, silent, constant presence at her side, grunts at me. I care deeply about you, it means, but do not ask me to string together a sentence.
Where's Her Majesty? I ask. She's in love with the scent of jasmine, so Hark brought her over to the tree to see the flowers up close.
Hey, Kaida! There's someone here who wants to see you.
When Kaida notices me, her face lights up, brighter than the lanterns. Little hands grasp in my direction.
Hey, princess!
I wave, ignoring the man carrying her.
Mada!
She squeals, which is as close as she gets to my name. She is, somehow, the perfect mix of her mother and father. Light brown hair and dark eyes, small and plump. Kaida was my first exposure to small children. I think I want one of these, I told Minami the day she was born. Or three, and I want them to be like her. That's how I became Kaida's official babysitter. In the weeks since returning from Switzerland, I've watched her nearly every day, which is, according to Minami, a lot of unpaid labor.
Wouldn't you rather be out partying?
At 8:30 a.m.? Or, I don't know, skateboarding? Making prank calls? Engaging in nuclear fission? I don't know what 20-somethings do these days.
Are you kidding?
I love hanging with Kaida. She's my bestie, aren't you? Kaida grinned, toothy, and held out her octopus plushie to me. A most resounding yes. The problem is, I may be her bestie, but I'm not the only one.
So Maya is here, and I'm old news, hmm?
A deep, fake, gruff tone, followed by a light tickle on her round tummy that has her peeling with laughter. Tragic, how much she likes Connor. I thought children come with a built-in jackass detector, like dogs. Then again, Tiny, too, often seeks snuggles from the enemy. Hey, baby girl. Kaida's little arms wrap around my neck. Connor's hand brushes against the back of mine, then lingers there to make sure that the baby is well supported.
Careful,
he murmurs, not letting go.
She's gotten heavier.
I've got her. It's a huge mistake, looking up at him, meeting his eyes. There is something in there, a guarded, hidden, resigned kind of sadness that reminds me of the first time he handed Kaida to